A Friday edition. We'll talk to Tom Gimbel in just a few minutes from LaSalle Network about holiday hiring. Oh, in the second half hour, Stephen Ides is a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute, and we're going to talk to Stephen about the Rust Belt, and he includes the Northeast along with the Midwest, but ways to improve the Rust Belt. President Trump says he's got some ideas, and the Manhattan Institute actually looked at it, so we'll talk to Stephen about that. Andrea Haines is in the studio. She's the editor of Blue Sky Innovation in the Tribune. Read it at your doorstep and online as well. And she joins us on most Fridays, and this is a most Friday. Andrea, welcome back.
Good to see you, Steve.
All right. The NASDAQ today has just been taking off. It is up currently, let me see, where are my numbers, 132 points. It was up more than that earlier, but 132 points, that's better than 2% because of earnings reports from, I think it was Alphabet and Amazon and others, and big day for Apple today, where they have started taking orders for, what are they calling it, iPhone 10?
Yes, the iPhone 10. It's not iPhone X, just FYI to listeners. Right. It's Roman numeral 10. So yes, the iPhone 10 can now be pre-ordered, and so far interest seems high.
Well, okay, so because the iPhone 8, is this like the floors don't have an elevator or floor 13? iPhone had an 8, right, that they just put on sale last month.
Yes.
And now it's the 10, so there was no 9.
Yep.
And Ian Sher was on from CNET yesterday. We're talking about this. What's the logic behind having just a 2-month window to sell the 8?
Yeah, it's funny. I think Ben, who works with us and is in here occasionally, has an 8. So I was grilling him on that exact topic, right?
Yeah.
Like, what makes you buy an 8? I think sometimes people are leery of just like the price point and the, you know, the first one off the product line isn't always perfect. And I think some people wanted it quicker. So I think there's a variety of reasons that people grab the 8 anyway. But the 10 does have some new features, and now people are jumping on that, but they're definitely going to have to wait a while for it,
Because they're selling out so fast.
They're selling out fast, and it sounds like supply is a little bit constrained, which is like, I guess maybe that creates a little more excitement, but it also, you know, you don't want to miss that holiday period when you're hoping people will be dropping for some new stuff.
This is the one they've been talking about forever, right? Oh, the big 10th anniversary, this is going to be revolutionary.
Exactly, yep.
Do we know what's on it that's different?
Yeah, so there's some, you know, much more sophisticated cameras along with things like facial unlocking, you know, some cool stuff like that, a different screen kind of form factor. So we'll be looking different than the ones we have now where, you know, for a while they've all kind of looked the same even as they change a little bit.
You guys have been involved all week in this, what's it called, the Fund?
Yep,
Forum,
the Fund Conference.
Fund Conference happening just on South Michigan Avenue where 100 or so. Well, tell me about it. What is the Fund Conference?
Yeah, so they bring together, it's, you know, they call it the Midwest Deal Conference, bringing together venture capitalists, founders from the region, Chicago, but also Midwest, a little bit of Silicon Valley, you know, a little bit of other places, bring together people who, you know, want to make deals, people who want to look for companies to invest in, and then startups who are looking for investment. As a part of that, they do content throughout the day on panels, so we were involved in that as well.
And it's fascinating to me, some of the things that came out. One of them saying that, you know, look, the days of saying this is the Uber of are kind of, that's old. That's not going to work anymore.
Yes, yes. That was the topic that we were interested in asking people about. Like, what's exciting you nowadays and what is kind of making you go, oh, please, not another platform.
right?
You and I sit here all the time and talk about platforms. And some of them do very well. But at a point, you start to hear yourself say, it's another platform.
Well, did it come out the fact that maybe all the low-hanging fruit has been sort of picked here?
I think that's very much true. I think the people that we were talking to who work in venture capital or, you know, we had someone from 1871 who counsels startups, like, what they were sort of saying is don't come to us with that same, it's the Uber for whatever, it's the Airbnb for whatever. You know, bring us something different and look to some industries that still need a little disruption.
Right.
Things like, you know, there's still things involving logistics, there's still things involving healthcare, where those are maybe big growth areas. And I think everyone's a little tired of the sort of typical Silicon Valley person who's making, you know, doing things for demographics just like their own. So I think that is feeling a little played out.
They're having fun in their basement rather than looking at it strictly at a business proposal.
Yeah, or just solving a problem for someone other than themselves.
I just think, you know, sometimes we need to stop, take a step back and look and consider what a remarkable time we live in. when it comes to the ability to come up with an idea and, you know, create a business and, you know, maybe change the world or maybe change the block. But I mean, since the Industrial Revolution, right, have we ever lived in a time like this?
It is true. It does seem like the sort of the barrier to get started is a lot less than it used to be because technology just creates, you know, something that many, pretty much everyone has access to. You don't necessarily look at publishing, right? You can sit down and be a publisher.
Right.
You don't need to be blessed by a major organization, right? That's the case with a lot of things. You can just kind of get in there and build things and do things.
All right. So another one of the conferences, I don't know if you were involved in this one, but had to do with millennials and attracting. And I love millennials. I think, you know, and here's a quote from a guy, Nick Brown, who's the founder of Glapit Nova, the Glapit Nova Festival.
Yep.
And his quote is, the biggest characteristic of a millennial is this crock pot of misunderstood.
Love that, right?
I do love that. What do you think he meant by that?
The crock pot of misunderstood. Well, I have to say, you know, millennial is a broad age group. It contains very different types of people, but yet we all talk about millennials as if they're one thing.
Right.
So I get that.
Almost always with disdain.
I would say kind of. I mean, it's a weird mix of like disdain in a way, but also knowing it's just such a powerful market force that in a way everybody's trying to cater to millennials.
Right.
So it's a weird combination, right?
Okay. Before you go, tell me about AMO Opportunities. We've talked about this business before, but they just came into a little cash. It's an interesting idea.
Yes. So they are facilitating foreign students who are becoming doctors, getting basically fellowships in the United States. It's a big thing to do, to come spend 4 months doing a fellowship here. Previously, those folks have had to kind of go through individual, maybe physicians' offices, or there just hasn't necessarily been a clearinghouse to do that. So they are building a way to do that. So it's kind of American Medical Opportunities, I guess you would call it. And they have just gotten $1 million to pursue that.
Nice.
Yeah.
Andrea Haynes, thank you for coming by. What's big on in Red Eye this week?
So actually, Red Eye has some cool stuff going on, which is their Big Idea Awards. So that gets a little bit into the business realm as well.
It's actually the Halloween issue
this week, but we're looking ahead to next week when we have this big event where we have 16 finalists, local startups, local ideas people want to pursue. And maybe we talk a little bit more about that next week
because
there's
some
good companies
that
in there.
That sounds great. Okay. Andrea Haynes from Blue Sky Innovation. Read more at ChicagoTribune.com.
Thanks, Steve.
Tom Gimbel, the founder, CEO of LaSalle Network on the phone line. Phone line. Hey,
I haven't been gone that long.
There was some spooky music that Bennett Wake Knight was playing there for Halloween, I think. I don't know if you heard that. Welcome back.
Good to see you.
I don't know if you... I've been off for once in a while, too, so I don't know if you've been here and
It has to have been 3 weeks.
Yeah. Okay. So are you panting? Did you just fly in from somewhere?
I was at a meeting and I ran over and I've been on the road. I've been in California, Hawaii, and then hosting a conference here in Chicago.
Vacation in Hawaii, was it?
I was on a plane or airport for 31 hours to spend 72 hours in Hawaii.
Really?
Yeah, I don't recommend that.
I have a buddy who flew to Iceland for a meeting at the airport and came home.
You know what? My feeling is for everything, and I've done similar stuff, not to Iceland, but it is take the opportunity when it's in front of you because you may not always have clients or prospects that want to meet with you.
All right, so there are opportunities now, and I think we had a similar conversation a year ago, but
yeah.
If you're out of work or if you're looking for extra revenue, income, this is kind of the time where there are a lot of opportunities out there.
Yeah, there's night work, there's weekend work, there's if you're a stay-at-home parent and you are going to use this opportunity to work Monday through Friday, there really is. And it's warehouse work, if you're open for that, and that's paying more and more every year. It's data entry, it's retail. I know a lot of people that still do retail because they get 20 to 40% off.
Of their clothes?
Yeah, and their gifts. Right? Marshall Fields, at Macy's or at Bloomingdale's or Nordstrom, and in addition to their sale prices, you get the employee discount.
So you're saying people will take a job at the Gap or somewhere.
Right. There's a Gap still.
Yeah.
Yes.
Or at the county seat.
Yeah.
And just to make some cash and to get a discount on
their Christmas shopping.
And then Aunt Marge buys everyone something from the county seat for Christmas.
Exactly right.
Wow. Okay. So if you're doing this, I would imagine, too, because whenever you hear UPS or Amazon's hiring, too, they also will say that we expect to keep a certain number of these people on full time.
Yeah, there's an opportunity following, whether you're doing retail, whether you're in a warehouse, whether you're doing data entry in an office, which is also an opportunity, too. A lot of companies, they're getting more bills paid, they're doing inventory, and it's not all physical labor. A lot of it is data entry. We're not that automated yet.
Right.
And they'll keep people. And if you're really good, you show up on, get there early, be willing to stay late, right? If it's 15 minutes, don't punch the clock for the 15 minutes, right? Work the last 15, show them that you care. Eventually, there's other opportunities that show up.
Treat it as if it's not a temporary job where you're just trying to get discounted blue jeans.
View it as an interview.
Right. And I would imagine it's an opportunity that really can pay off.
It can pay off long term. It also can pay off spring break. It can pay off next summer. It can pay off next Christmas. If you don't have to look for it again, it eliminates that bit of stress.
I mean, how many people do have their entry-level job at the holidays and then stay with them? I mean, is that a pretty common thing?
Oh, thousands and thousands. Yeah. Oh, always, every year. And I think now what's really happened, the Uberization of work has taken the negative stigma off of a lot of jobs.
What do you mean by that?
I mean that 30 years ago, right, if someone said, oh, I'm going to be working in the warehouse packing boxes, it would be like, you are? Why would you do that? Right? You have a college degree, you're a stay-at-home parent, whatever it is. Today, you have people that were executives driving, for all intents and purposes, a taxi and calling it an Uber or a Lyft.
And you're
right?
Oh, you're an Uber driver? That's cool.
That's okay. Yeah. Oh, I get why you're doing that. You can make your own hours and make some money.
Excellent point.
And so now the stigma that there's more humility in the workforce than I've ever seen before.
Hey, let me ask you a question. We only have 30 seconds or so, but we had a guest on a month or so ago. You know, everyone's talking about manufacturing jobs. You have to increase manufacturing jobs. And there was a statistic that people are willingly leaving manufacturing jobs at a higher rate than manufacturing jobs are disappearing. Does that make any sense to you?
No, I'm surprised. That stat surprises me that people are more leaving. You know,
I think the idea was that maybe they aren't as good of a job. The jobs aren't as attractive as we think they might be.
Well, I think what's happened is you get a lot of people who say, well, I can do Uber. I mean, Uber, in some ways, there's a negative effect to it, too. Because I talk to your Uber driver. How many hours do they work? They'll say 10 to 12 hours a day.
Right.
But it's okay because it's in your own car.
Well, it's okay because there's some great radio to listen to while you're driving around. That's
at least
why
there
it's
is
okay.
From 12 to 1 on WGN 720.
Tom Gimbel is the CEO of LaSalle Network and has a great farewell line. Very nice. I like the way you did that.
I'm always here to help.
How do people find more information?
LaSalleNetwork.com, at LaSalle Network, and at Tom Gimbel on Twitter.
Great to see you. We'll see
Thanks
you again
for
soon.
Me.
Okay, we've got tickets to Bob Dylan and Mavis Staples. It's the first show at the Wintrust Arena tonight.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And
I drove by the building. I was at a show at McCormick Place all week. It's gorgeous.
Yeah, it looks beautiful. And I know the sky's going to play there. DePaul's going to play
there. And it's an easy, easy, easy commute from the Loop. Everybody should go there and support DePaul.
Well, we've got tickets for two for Bob Dylan, Mavis Staples, the 10th caller, 312-981-7200.
Can I call in?
312-981-7200, the 10th caller. All right, see you, Gimbel.
Yep.
And all right, I'll talk about tax reform from the White House this week. A lot going on there. The president has campaigned on the fact that he can bring back manufacturing, help cities, particularly in the Rust Belt here in the Midwest, and then in some spots in the Northeast as well. The Manhattan Institute has been looking at those very cities, and we're joined now by Stephen Ide, who's a senior fellow on urban policy at the Manhattan Institute. Stephen, thanks for joining us on the Business Lunch.
Hey, thanks a lot for having me.
Okay, so let's just start in general. I know you looked at specifics, but when we think of this region, let's say Midwestern cities, is there sort of a common situation for them, or is each of them unique?
Well, I'm trying in this report to focus on what is in common. You know, the most obvious thing they have in common is, you know, significant manufacturing job losses since, you know, the post-World War golden era of around 1950. Manufacturing jobs have declined. Many of them have most of them have lost population since that time. They've also seen their poverty rates increase since 1970. All that is, I think, pretty familiar to a lot of people. What I try to do in my report is in addition to quantifying those trends, add on to the narrative the fact that they've also seen their financial obligations increase during the time. At the same time that their economies have been becoming weaker, their per capita debt load and also the size of their retirement liabilities has been expanding. So at the same time that that these debt levels have been going up, the tax base that stands behind these promises has been getting weaker and weaker. And, you know, at a certain point, there's going to be a reckoning. In some cases, like Detroit, there's already been a reckoning. Probably we're going to see that in other cities as well.
Stephen, I'm sitting in Chicago, and we do more stories about pension debt, pension obligations, efforts at pension reform, and it doesn't seem as if there's really anything positive being done about that. Chicago's not alone in that, you're telling me.
No, I mean, different cities have different levels of underfunding. Chicago is also, you know, economically speaking, I think a lot of people have difficulty imagining that the economy of Chicago is just going to totally collapse, like the economy of places like Youngstown, Ohio, and, you know, Flint, Michigan has collapsed. So in a way, you know, if you're inside the loop, you're like, well, pension problem? What pension problem? Right. This looks like a pretty healthy city to me. So the politics get very, very complicated. So again, this gets into the kind of nuances and the differences between different places. But, you know, you're certainly going to be seeing less spending in Chicago on basic municipal services, a very, very weak bond rating, higher borrowing costs. So it certainly has ramifications whether or not people want to pay attention to it or not.
You mentioned populations, and I think one of the statistics is three quarters of the 96 largest Rust Belt cities are off their population high. So if you take it from 1900 to 2010, whatever they had their population high, they're below that now. Does that speak to metropolitan areas? I mean, are the metro areas getting bigger? Are the suburbs benefiting from the suffering in the cities?
Well, that's a good question. In my report, since I am talking about these financial obligations, which are of the cities themselves, not the metro areas, I'm just talking about the central cities, the cities themselves, not the metro areas. You know, this always comes up. Maybe we need to, like, combine these two local government, combine these local governments, you know, somehow fold them into one another. Practically speaking, those discussions tend not to go very far.
Has that ever happened? Has there been like a regional authority like that anywhere?
I mean, there are very rare instances of, you know, mergers and regionalizations that have been affected. In Indianapolis is an example that people always point to. But even in the rare case where you do overcome the political obstacles between the city and the suburbs and affect some sort of regionalization, you don't achieve the type of efficiency gains and savings that the advocates of those programs, of those proposals, tend to assume you will achieve.
Okay, so we've got these cities. They are losing population. Their pension is swallowing them up in many cases. And so what do they bring in? A lot of them, I know, are working on bringing in education facilities or different hospitals or things like that. Is that a wise move?
Well, you do what you can. I mean, I think that, you know, the point I would try to make is that economically, there's just so much uncertainty, you know, that, like, they, in terms of the educational institutions, healthcare facilities, the big growth in those jobs happened not as a result of anything like that city officials did, but just because of broader changes in our service sector, in our economy. So, you know, it's not all bad news, and it's not like the heartland, economically speaking, is doomed. Maybe some manufacturing will come back.
I'm waiting to hear that.
It's going to be a very different kind of manufacturing. It's not going to provide nearly as many jobs as it used to.
I was going to say, Stephen, I'm waiting to hear the undoomed part. What's the bright side here?
Well, cities do find themselves on a spectrum, you know, even if you're not going to be like New York and Boston, which are two cities that I would describe as like probably the most successful comeback cities over the past couple of decades. Not everybody's as bad off as Youngstown and Flint. Chicago is a complicated case because it's so big. And fiscally speaking, it bears so many similarities to the really bad off cities. But you're going to find yourself somewhere in the middle. And, you know, once you develop there is such a thing as a realistic standard for urban revitalization. And some cities do, you know, do meet that standard. But, you know, you're going to have to get your budget in order if you want to get there.
You know, my kids both go to different schools in southern Ohio. So my route is to drive down through Chicago, down I-65, through Indianapolis, and then into Dayton, Cincinnati, and things like that. And so I do see some of these cities, and sometimes you're in a city center and you think, well, this is great. They've really revitalized. But the fact is the revitalization, it seems mostly to be with restaurants or downtown shopping areas, not something that is really a sustainable big boost for urban areas. Am I correct in that read, or am I incorrect?
Right. Well, this poverty statistics show that any of those downtown revitalizations have not moved the needle on the poverty rate, so to speak. I mean, look, if you have two very poor cities, they're both struggling in many ways. One has a nice downtown, the other one doesn't. Sure, I'll take the city with a nice downtown, but in terms of the fundamentals, those, you know, sprucing up your downtown is going, it's really more of like a quality of life type thing than it is an economic development push.
What's working then? Are there cities that have turned it around in the Rust Belt or that others can look to? I mean, are there success stories here?
I think in terms of the success stories that everybody focuses on, like New York and Boston, I think those cities are more different than the places like Youngstown, Erie. They're more likely to be misleading than helpful, those examples
I
are.
See, right.
I think flying somewhat lower below the radar, there's cities that you haven't heard, you know, people haven't heard of, you know, a place like, you know, Worcester, Massachusetts is a city of kind of 180,000, center of Massachusetts. I used to work there, you know, Old Mill Town. It's not, you know, not necessarily the most attractive place, but, you know, their budget is balanced, they're solvent. And, you know, in some cases, the fact that these places like Worcester are not making news is a sign that they're at least doing something right at the present.
All right, let's wrap up where we started then. The president has talked about doing what he can to help and making that an initiative. Is it something the federal government can fix?
I think it's very unlikely that anything the federal government does, whether new trade agreements, whether spending on infrastructure, is really going to help these areas in the Midwest and Northeast. I think in the near term, you know, in the medium term, which is a more useful horizon for policymakers to focus on, we really need to be focused on what states and cities themselves can do to get their own finances in order.
That's Stephen Ides, the senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute, talking about the Rust Belt, all of that. All right, we'll take a break, come back, check your money, traffic, and all of that. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. All right, time now for our number of the week, and the number this week is 247 million. As in 247 million hectoliters of wine. That's the estimate for this year's world wine production. It's actually the lowest level of production in 50 years, and they're blaming bad weather in Italy, Spain, and France for that. Italy alone is going to be down 23% in wine production. Now, here's the thing. We all bought a lot less wine during the economic downturn, so they're sitting on a stash. It looks like there won't be a shortage still. Prices might go up a little bit. Okay, let's talk to Front Row Phyllis. She joins us once in a while on Fridays to talk about things coming up this weekend. Phyllis, this is a big weekend this weekend, isn't it? Oh, I'm sorry, Phyllis. How about there you go. I'm sorry. Big weekend this weekend.
Big weekend this weekend, and it's before Halloween. So
and Halloween, do you have your costume picked out?
I do have my costume picked out. How about you?
No, of course I don't. What's your costume?
You know, I'm kind of in between. I'm either going to be a witch or I'm going to be a purple Crayola crayon.
Well, go for the Crayola crayon, Phyllis,
okay.
Because I can't imagine you as a witch. I mean, that's just...
Okay, thanks, Steve.
That costume would have to be way too good. I was talking about what's going on in Chicago along the lakefront with the Wintrust Arena opening up tonight.
Yeah, this is actually the first concert that they are going to open their doors to. And we're pretty excited about it. Plus, I hope that there's going to be a lot more. So it's actually a big show. Bob Dylan, along with Mavis Staples. And you'll get a chance to see both of them up close and personal. And, you know, he actually just released his 38th album a couple months ago. 38 albums.
I've got 32. I've got 32 of them. I'm a little bit behind, I guess.
I know, you got to go pick them up or download them, something like that.
It's an interesting choice that, and I don't know, maybe just it's all about scheduling, but that this is the first concert, because Mavis Staples, a true Chicago legend.
Oh, yeah.
So it'd be great, and she doesn't play that often, so that'll be nice. And then
it will be great.
Dylan headlining it. You know, we gave away a couple of tickets earlier, thanks for that.
Absolutely.
Mike from Chicago is going to go see it. Have you seen the Wintrust Arena yet? It looks beautiful.
It does look beautiful. I have not been over there yet, so I'm not sure if I'm going to have some time. I'm hoping that I get a chance to at least swing by there tonight.
I know a lot of people are probably trying to decide, gosh, you know, they're big, big Bob Dylan fans, but, well, Dylan fans tend to also be big Kenny Rogers fans. I don't know. Is that true?
Yes. Oh, yeah. They are. And you know what? It's his last show, and that's tomorrow evening over at the Rosemont Theater.
His last show? What do you mean his last show?
Yeah. He said he's going to be hanging up the cowboy boots.
Oh.
So he's actually wants to take time away from show business. He wants to spend more time with his family. And this is what he says. It's his final tour. But, you know, that happened with Cher a couple of years ago, too.
It's happened with a lot of people. But I don't imagine there's a big crossover between Bob Dylan and Kenny Rogers, do you think?
No, but, you know, I think everybody just likes music. What do you think?
Yeah, let's talk about a couple kid things. What's this Halloween at Lincoln Park Zoo?
So this is really fun. You get a chance to. It's tomorrow on Saturday from 10 to 1, free admission. And you just get a chance to have the kids wear their costume. They walk around trick-or-treating in the park. And there's going to be live music, as well as there's a craft area that they can make things. And there's also a haunted house. So it's really cute. And don't forget to stop and say hi to the animals, because they love seeing everybody.
Is the haunted house isn't like in the lion cage or anything like that, was it? Because that'd be a little too scary.
That would be a little scary. Yeah, I don't think so. I don't know.
Speaking of scary, let's go to the north side and a dessert crawl in Andersonville.
Yeah, doesn't that sound wonderful? That's on Sunday. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I am so excited for this. I'm not eating for the next couple of days because of it. So it runs Sunday from 2 to 5. It's for all ages. And they actually have two routes called Gumdrop Mountain and Peppermint Forest. And each section is going to feature about 11 sweet spots. So some of these restaurants, you know, all the big restaurants in Andersonville are going to offer different desserts, everything from pecan pie, rice pudding, apple strudel with some ice cream.
Wow. That actually sounds, that does sound pretty good. All right. Where do people find more information about this stuff, Phyllis?
They just go to frontrowphyllis.com.
I appreciate you joining us today. I'll see you down at the Wintrust Arena.
You got it.
It's the Wintrust Business. It's all Wintrust. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN.